You've probably found yourself at some time or other in a social situation where you felt awkward, or been at a concert, or even in an open plan office where the noise is too much, or at the supermarket and all the choices in front of you seem kind of overwhelming. Lots of us can feel like this to a degree every now and then, but for some people, these kinds of things can be a serious challenge every single day. So how does it feel to discover that after many years of wondering why particular situations are so hard for you, there's a name for it? In a moment, we'll meet two people who found out well into adulthood that they have autism. But first, let's meet Fiona Sharkey. She's the CEO of AMAZE. This is the peak advocacy group for people with autism and their families in Victoria. Hello, Fiona.
Good to be here.
So what does your research tell you about what people in general tend to know and don't know about autism?
Well, the research was really revealing in many ways, and most of all that we found that 98% of Australians have heard of autism, so raising awareness of autism is not our job to do.
Not necessary.
Not necessary. And further, we found that 85% of Australians have contact with an autistic person, so that was staggering because 85% is virtually everyone. But that same 85% or of all Australians, only 29% said that they would know what to do to support an autistic person. And we had another study that we asked autistic people, what is it that you would like, or neurotypical people, as we call them, to know about autism? Because autistic people told us, and their families said, if the wider community had a better understanding of autism, their lives would be much better.
So, all right, so what kinds of conversations then are you trying to, you know, start to generate to get a better understanding?
Well, what we found also was what autistic people wanted people to know was about how autism impacts a person. So that can be, as you described, with sensory sensitivities, but it also can be challenges in social situations because of language and taking language literally. It can also be the need for additional processing time because autistic people are taking in often so much more information than you and I are that there's a lot of information to process, and so they will need more time often to answer questions or with the work that they are doing. So we have this campaign, as you mentioned, Do One Thing for Autism, where we're asking people to do one simple thing or commit to doing one simple thing, and there are 35 different things that you can choose from to actually grow your understanding.
So what's
of
an
autism.
Example?
So, well, often some of the things to do are things not to do, and one of the biggest challenges that autistic people find, and we will completely understand, is about judgment. So if an autistic person does become overwhelmed and goes into a meltdown situation, the last thing they need, or if a child is doing that, the last thing their parent needs are for people to stand around and stare, to tut tut, to roll their eyes. All of that is extremely unhelpful. So that's actually one thing to do for autism, is actually by doing very little.
Mm. Well, we've been hearing a lot lately, Fiona, about the rise in autism diagnoses, particularly among children. What are the latest figures on how many children are on the autism spectrum in Australia?
So we don't have any empirical actual evidentiary basis, but with the latest data we have is 1 in 100 children. The US now, at the Centre for Disease Control, have got down to around 1 in 65. And we need to point out there's nothing in the water. You know, there's not a pandemic of autism. Yeah. It is that we have got much better at identifying
yes.
autism. There is more awareness of autism. As we said, 98% of people have heard of it. And it's actually a very good thing that we're able to diagnose much earlier. And even as young as 12 months now, we can see signs of autism.
So with what you've just said, would it be fair to say that there'd be adults who would never have received an autism diagnosis, but who may well be on the spectrum because, you know, less was known about autism when they were kids.
Absolutely, the fact. And certainly when I went to school in the dark ages, we can say that school was very organised and orderly. The classroom was very organised. We sat in the same desk. We had our things in our desk. The teacher stood at the front of the class. And so we wouldn't have necessarily picked up autism as much as what we can now when we're in a children in a classroom that children move around, they sit on mats, they have different time. There's lots of stimuli in the room. So it's perhaps more identified from that perspective as well. But at Emmaus, we receive calls from around 2,500 parents of children who've just been diagnosed. And I can say anecdotally that, you know, 4 years ago when I started at Emmaus, we would have a mother call up and say, my son's just been diagnosed, because the ratio of boys to girls is now 3-1. My son's been diagnosed, and I always knew his father was, perhaps there was something quirky about his father. Today, what we're seeing much more, and again, anecdotally, is that mothers will ring up and say, my daughter's just been diagnosed, or my son's been diagnosed, and, you know, I've seen these signs in myself. And so many more women now, as we have one fabulous woman here, Sarah, today, are finding out. So we don't know the causes of autism, but we certainly know that there is a genetic link there.
Well, let's now welcome Sarah Munnings. Sarah did indeed find out that she has autism as an adult. Sarah, hello.
Hello there.
Now, you were diagnosed with autism not long after your young son was diagnosed, is the sort of scenario that Fiona's been describing. First of all, when your son was diagnosed, did that surprise you?
It did, because up until then we started to go through Scott's diagnosis, I actually had very little understanding of what it meant to be autistic. And so I actually went through a period of almost grief and shock, because you imagine that your child is born and you always think of your child as a certain way. And to me, Scott had always just been what I considered normal. So it was quite a surprise to find out that actually this amazing child was autistic, and to learn about some of the challenges but also the strengths that came with it for him.
Now, I understand it was your stepmother who first alerted you to the possibility. What did she notice about his behaviour?
My parents live overseas, so they didn't see a lot of Scott, and we were away on a holiday together, and they observed Scott bouncing on a jumping pillow, and he was with his younger brother. And she came in, and I think her comment was something along the lines of, do you know, I think Scott might be autistic. I know someone whose son is very similar. And it was almost delivered as a comment on behaviour rather than a specific observation. So she was saying that he looks like he's doing a certain thing. And I actually, at the time, was actually quite offended, because I didn't understand that autism isn't a behavioural condition, that there was so much more to it.
But was it surprising to you because your son's way of being in the world was perfectly understandable to you, because some of his traits were just like your own?
Absolutely. And it was really interesting, because even when we'd gone through the diagnosis, I was looking at Scott going, but I can completely understand why he does everything that he does, because he's just like me. And then as you go through diagnosis, the more that someone discusses what's involved, you start to go, well, that's me, and that's me, and I do that too. And it's actually really interesting to see how many of the traits that I've grown up believing are positive, he also shares and were part of his diagnosis.
Yes, well, tell me about, you know, I mean, after your son's diagnosis, you started reading up more on it and learning all these things. What was it then like for you to realise that this was you too?
It was like a long period of self-discovery, and people talk about understanding themselves. And it really was a turning point for me, where there were parts of me and parts of my life that I'd always questioned. And instead of questioning it, I could say, I now understand the reason why. I understand why, if I walk into a room full of people, I want to stand at the edge and I might not want to interact. I want to be with people, but I don't want to make small talk. But I can stand up and give a presentation in front of hundreds of people, because that's something that I believe in. And so it helped me to understand that kind of thing.
Make sense of yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I want you now to meet Paul Micallef. Like Sarah, he's found out that he has autism as an adult. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Amanda.
Now, you, I think, like to use the word discovered rather than diagnosed when it comes to your autism. Why do you make that distinction in your case?
Well, to say diagnosed sounds as if someone else found out, whereas in my case, I really feel like I discovered that I'm on the spectrum. So, yeah, so because it came from me and I kind of feel like I'm taking ownership of that label, it's not something that I necessarily needed, but because I feel such a connection to the autism community and the other people on the spectrum that I've met, I really embrace that label of Asperger's as an identity thing. So
when did you start to realise that this was you, that you say Asperger's, so you make the distinction between Asperger's and autism?
Yeah, so I read a book called Look Me in the Eye.
Ah, now this is John Elder
Robison. That's right.
Who's a US, he was a sound engineer, wasn't he? Didn't he make the guitar sounds for Kiss?
Yeah, something. He did quite a lot of incredible things in his life.
Mm-hmm. And one of them was that he wrote this book about having Asperger's, yeah?
Yeah, so it was an autobiography and the subtitle was My Life with Asperger's. So I was reading through that book and he was explaining all of these peculiar things to the reader as if the reader shouldn't understand. And like one example was, he heard about the death of someone else in his community and he started smiling and he got told off for smiling. And in hindsight, he was explaining how he was smiling because he'd already gone through a whole lot of complex places in his head in the process. And he was smiling because he realized that all of his family members were safe because they wouldn't be as stupid as to do what this person did to get hit by a train, for example. So he was explaining all of these things as if the reader shouldn't understand, but I was just intuitively understanding everything that he was doing. And despite the fact that we are very, very different people, I got about halfway through the book and put it down and Googled Asperger's and found a support group meeting and started meeting others on the spectrum. So that was the beginning of my story.
And so like Sarah, did that experience start for you to make sense, help you make sense of yourself?
Yeah, so it started off as a little bit confusing and I didn't really know what to expect, especially when I first got to that support group meeting and I thought, everyone here is so different. How on earth am I going to find out if I fit in? But once I started getting a sense of what Asperger's really looks like in adults, it put all of these seemingly random bits of my life that didn't make sense. It tied them all together with one story. So it was, yeah, really good for me.
So when you say all those bits, what are all those bits?
So certain social things. So for example, I took quite a while to learn how to make friends. I remember the transition to high school was really, really difficult because all of a sudden you don't actually play anything at lunchtime and recess, you sit around and talk. And it took me quite a few years to figure out how to do that. So that's one example. And looking back to when I was very young, like in primary school, I had a lot of sensory issues, especially with food and smell. And I couldn't drink fizzy drink, for example. And I never thought twice about why I couldn't drink fizzy drink. Kids have all kinds of weird
things. In retrospect, that's good, though, for your health.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, you write a blog. It's called Asperger's from the Inside. And in it, you invite other people to write about how, you know, their own story. What's it been like to read other people's stories?
Yeah, so it's been an amazing little project. I've shared 15 diagnosis stories now of adults from all over the world who've contacted me and said that they wanted to participate. So the thing that I like about it is I can relate a little bit to all the stories, but all the stories are so different, different cultures, different ages, everything. So,
Well, Fiona Sharkey, Paul really, as he was saying, discovered autism, Asperger's himself. You don't have a formal diagnosis, Paul, is that right?
So it was important for me to know I wasn't crazy. That was one of the things that the label did for me. So I went to see a psychologist and together with the psychologist, we decided that it wasn't worth going all the way through the formal diagnosis process. So I have what's called a preliminary diagnosis, but it's not official.
Right, right. I wonder, Fiona, if that suggests that, figures for autism might be, larger than we suspect. And if there are people, adults and children, who choose not to go down the path of diagnosis, well, for all sorts of reasons, but as I think Paul is suggesting, you know, parents sometimes don't like that label for their children.
Yeah, that's right. And again, anecdotally, but most of the adults, I would say all of the adults I've met who have discovered they're autistic, as Paul said, have this huge sense of relief, and they talk about things about saying, I now see how I fit in the world, where I thought before maybe why wasn't I fitting in the world. I now see I'm not weird, you know, or different. I am who I am. And as I say, there is a great sense of relief, but also a new discovery. And I think that's what Sarah's alluding to, of saying there's, I'm finding out all these things now that make me the person that I am, but show the strengths that I have as well.
Well, Sarah, looking back on your own childhood, did you find school, for example, difficult because, well, now looking back, knowing that you have autism?
Certainly looking back, I can see I connected better with adults than I did with children. I was often, I was actually very academic, often on my own, spent a lot of time reading, and that was my way of dealing with things like lunchtimes and social situations, because I could just disappear off into my own world. So certainly I can see it early on, yes.
Do you disclose to people now in your work situations, for example, that you have autism?
I'm starting to do more so, yes. It's part of my accepting who I am, but also part of me trying to help my son find his place in the world. The more that I'm able to go in and explain to someone that I'm autistic and what that means in a conversation. So, for example, I wanted to talk to somebody about marketing, but I knew I wouldn't be able to make that initial phone call. So I emailed and I asked for a very short face-to-face meeting and explained why. I explained I was autistic and I really struggle because I can't read someone's body language over the phone. And it helped enormously, because now I'm actually finding I'm able to go out and do more things because I'm able to go, this bit I find difficult, so let's find another way around it.
And so emailing and meeting face-to-face works for you, whereas a phone conversation doesn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Paul, has discovering your Asperger's helped you to deal with some of the more tricky situations in your life? Has knowing it helped?
Yeah. So just like Sarah was saying, I've found an entirely new vocabulary to explain to other people what I need and why I need it. So an example of that is I use text-to-speech software now, because looking at a screen is really, really difficult for me. And you can imagine how much that impacts me on a daily basis. Yeah. I can't fill up my car at the petrol station without looking at a TV screen now that is trying to, you know.
So any digital display is difficult for you to look at.
So now I can explain that, and I can say, this is the reason I'm turning my phone off for the next 3 days, and this is the reason why I would like a digital version of this, so that I can get my computer to read it to me, because I find it difficult to read, things like that.
Yeah. Well, you've both given us great insights into your lives. Paul Micallef discovered he had autism as an adult. He writes a blog called Asperger's from the Inside. And Sarah Munnings found out she had autism as an adult after her son was diagnosed. Fiona Sharkey has also been with us. She's CEO of AMAZE, an autism advocacy group in Victoria. Fiona, Sarah, Paul, great to meet you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Amanda.
You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith.